So we're in the sugya of Motzi Shem Ra. Let's just review what we know. There's a machlokas in the Mishnah between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim. How many judges do we need to decide a Motzi Shem Ra situation? Now let's just mention that Motzi Shem Ra has three different elements to it. Number one, When the husband comes into Beis Din after consummating the marriage, he runs in with anger the very next morning, and he says, "Lo matzasi lebitcha besulit," and I didn't find it to be a besula, pesach pasuch matzasi. So the first element in the equation is the ksuba. He was sort of cheated into this marriage relationship under the premise that she is a besula, and lo and behold, she's not a besula. So he wants to get out of the ksuba. That's a serious monetary consideration. The second element in the equation is that in effect, if we find that he's lying, and the whole story was what do they call today, fake news, and therefore he slandered her, then he has to pay mea kesef. He has to pay a very hefty penalty, and that's paid to the father of this girl. She's a nara. Then the third element in the equation here is that in event that two witnesses come to support his claim, and they testify that in fact she had an illicit relationship, an immoral relationship during the Erisin period, then she's to be put to death. And that makes it into a capital case. The machlokas here between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim is how do we treat the case in terms of the number of judges as either a monetary case which requires three judges or as a capital case which requires 23 judges before the witnesses come in. In other words, if there are witnesses here that in front of us, then for sure we need 23 judges, because then we're talking about witnesses who are testifying on a chiyuv skila, and that's a capital crime, and that requires a beis din of chav gimel. But what in event that there are no edim right now, so it's either his claim against her that I found her to be a ba'ula and if I don't want to pay the ksuba, or it's the father's claim against him that he has made up this whole story and this slander and therefore he has to pay the penalty of Meir Kesef, but the maximum is money. It's either this money or that money, but it's a monetary case and it only requires a basin of three judges. Right now, we don't have edim. If we don't have witnesses, then it's not a capital case. Vaya, if down the line witnesses come in, then we'll beef up the court and we'll add another 20 judges to make it into a capital judgment of 23 judges. So Rabbi Meir says right now it's a monetary case. There's a monetary claim and it's a lawsuit. Therefore, three judges suffice. And Rabbi and the Chachamim are worried about Starting the judgment with three judges, and then in event that witnesses come in, now we have to change the makeup of the court, and we have to add 20 judges. The Chachamim are not happy about that situation. Maybe it looks a little fishy to the spectator. Why is it that all of a sudden they're adding judges? What's wrong with these three judges? You started with these three judges. Why couldn't you finish with them? Whatever the logic might be, the Chachamim are choshesh, they're worried about the fact that Aiden down the line will show up and then we'll have to change the makeup of the court. Let's start, prevention is not ideal. Let's already foresee the possibility that there'll be a judgment of a capital crime in event that the Aiden come in, and therefore we're going to require from the get-go, we're going to require 23 judges. Now if we take a look at Rashi, both in the Mishnah and here on Daf Ches, Rashi is very consistent. I'll read to you the Rashi. It's seven lines down from the top of the Masechta, Daf Beis Amud Aleph. Rashi says in the Mishnah, Motzi Shemra means Lo Matzasi Lebitcha Besulin. Basically, the claim is I didn't find it to be a Besula. So that's Rashi in the Mishnah. And Rashi is very consistent here in the Gemara Daf Ches. Rashi says Hamotzi Shemra, which is about two thirds of the way down in Rashi on Daf Ches Amud Aleph. Rashi says Lo Matzasi Lebitcha Besulin. Now Rashi adds a line which we didn't see in Rashi in the Mishnah, Ubalaf Sidak Subasa, And his claim is that he doesn't want to pay the ksuba. The lola harga, he's not bringing witnesses that would prove that they gave her a warning and they saw that she had this relationship and therefore she's tied misa. She'eno mevi eidim shezin setaptav. He wants the bezdin to believe his claim as far as monetary law is concerned. Again, his claim would not be enough to have a woman put to death. For that, we need eidim and asra. But at least chach, believe me, I'm telling the truth, and I don't want to pay the ksuba. So that, So that's a monetary claim, right? Thank you. That's a monetary case. And the Chachamim say, you know what? Maybe Eidim will come in. When he comes into Bezdin, he says, L'matzasi l'bitcha besulin, you know, the rumor gets around. You know, where there's smoke, there's fire. You know, the people start whispering at the street corners, what's going on here? He came in running in with all anger, you know, the very morning after they consummated the marriage, after the chuppah. And he's claiming that he didn't find it to be a besulah. And when the word circulates, you know, people start thinking, wait, I did see something, and then maybe the Eidim will come forward. So the Chacham from the get-go want to start with how many judges?
23.
Now, what we want to do today, I mean, I don't know if this will take the whole shiur, but it may take the bulk of the shiur, is to go through this Tosfos, Motzi Shemra. Because I don't always learn Tosfos with you at 8:30 in the morning, but in this case, this Tosfos is very critical. And basically what we're going to see here is a machlokas between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. Rashi is the grandfather, Rabbeinu Tam is the grandson. And there's no family compassion over here. You know, Rabbeinu Tam is going to present a whole slew of questions and objections to Rashi. So our learning of this Tosfos will be split into two parts. The first part, the first half of this Tosfos, is going to be all the questions, the objections that Rabbeinu Tam raises against Rashi. And the second half is going to be Rabbeinu Tam's his own interpretation of this sugya. His own shot in the soup. So by way of introduction, we have to mention the following concept. Okay, let me see if I can write this down here. One of the key concepts in understanding the machlokas between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam is the concept of tvi'a, which loosely translates as a claim. And if you turn this noun into a description of a person, the person is called a tovea. So I don't know how to translate tovea.
Claimant.
Okay, we'll do it that way. Or you might call it the plaintiff. But in any event, that's the tovea. Now, the entire machlokas here between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam is about these concepts of tvi'a and tovea. What is the tvi'a and who's the tovea? One thing is clear. What we're talking about here is mamon. When I say mamon, I mean as opposed to nefashos. Okay? This means that at this stage of the development, the issue which the judges are addressing, which is called in Hebrew the Nidon, okay, and that's used even in modern Hebrew, the state of Israel, the Nidon is Mamon and not Nefashos. Now the reason why that has to be, and that's one thing in this sugya that's unquestionable, is because otherwise Rav Meir makes no sense. If the Nidon is Nefashos, i.e. there are Eidim here in Bezdin, then Rav Meir makes no sense at all. There's no way that Rabbi Meir can deny that in capital cases we need a judge, we need a Bezdin that's made up of 23 judges. So we have to assume that the Nidon here is Mamon and not what?
Nefashos.
And not Nefashos. Okay. But now, the question is, Which mammon are we talking about? Okay, now the concept of mammon divides up into two. Okay, there's something called literally mammon, which means compensation, right? And then there's something called what?
Knas.
Knas. Knas means a penalty, and it has no relationship whatsoever to the concept of compensation. Now, the laws of Knas change when we learn Masechta Sanhedrin from the laws of Mammon. For example, in Mammon, all we need is Gimel. Anybody know the next word? Hedyotos.
Yes.
In the case of Knas, we need Gimel Mumchim. And Mumchim means Smuchim, which means that the next time you show up in a Beis Din, which I hope you don't have to, but let's say you're curious, you want to be a spectator, you take your seat in the back of a Beis Din. Jay, we're going to have to figure out a way of cutting that out. I mean, I love the digging, but okay. So what happens here? We have a case here in Israel. Let's say right now we go to the Beis Din, or I don't know, maybe you have to be in Williamsburg. They have a Beis Din. I don't know where you have a Beis Din, right? In London there's a Beis Din, right? Wherever it is, there's a Beis Din.
Probably Lakewood.
In Lakewood there's a Beis Din. I think in Toronto there's a Beis Din. There's a Beis Din. And I've never heard, and tell me if you've heard anything to the contrary, that they ever imposed a chiyuv kefel, that they told the thief that he has to pay 200%, not 100% of what he stole, but 200%. Why didn't we ever hear such a thing? Because kefel is called what? Knas. So if I'm suing you for the keren, right, keren, which means the actual value of the stolen object, so then I'm going to sue you for keren, it's called the principal, P-A-L, I think it is, right? And, right? Did I get that right, P-A-L? Oh, P-L-E is the principal? Oh, okay, P-L-E. Then that I can sue you for in any business, anywhere in the face of the earth. But if I'm talking about the kefil, I want to add to you, to top, another 100%. So that requires a Bezin Shel Smuchim, which is only in Eretz Yisrael, not even in Babel. You know, even in Babel, the time of the Gemara, they didn't have Smuchim already, and therefore they couldn't judge Knossos. So that in our context, and here I'm going to ask you a question, and hopefully you'll fall into my trap, because I want you to fall into my trap, okay, for pedagogical reasons. What would you say is the subject of our Mishnah? When the Mishnah says you need three judges, is the Mishnah talking about Hedyotos or Smuchim? What would you say?
Smuchim.
Ah, okay, so you didn't fall into my trap. I was hoping that you would say Hedyotos, because I was hoping you would say, well, the Mishnah is addressing even Bavel, even cases where there are no Smuchim. But the truth is that the Mishnah is divided into two parts. The Mishnah opens up by saying, Dinei Mamonos B'Shlosha, and that means Shlosha Hedyotos, because then we're talking about, let's say, Halvos, Hodos, let's say I sue you for not repaying a loan. So in that case, Hedyotos, you don't need Smuchim. But then the Mishnah goes on to speak about Tashlume Kefil, Tashlume Dal Vehe, Onus Umafate, and those are Knossos. Those certainly require Smuchim. There's no question about it. And that's why Ain Dun in Dine Knossos Bebovel. In Bovel, we cannot judge penalties. We can only judge what we call compensation mamon. So let's go back to our original question. Who is the Tovea and what is the Tvia? We're talking about Dini Mamonos. We can't be talking about Dini Nefash, because otherwise Reb Meir makes no sense. He requires only three judges. So obviously the case began and evolved around monetary claims. But who is the claimant and what is he claiming? This is going to be the Machlokas Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. Rashi is going to say, as we saw before, who's the claimant?
The Baal.
The Baal. And what does he want to claim? I don't want to pay the Ksuba. Rabbeinu Tam is going to have many problems with this, but one of the problems is you wouldn't call the Baal a Tovea. Tovea means that the Malve is Tovea the Lover. The Lover is trying to free himself of the claim of the Malve. That's not called the Tvia. Tvia means a plaintiff who's trying to get money out of someone's pocket. That's simply the Teich. That is the etymological definition, the dictionary definition of the word Tovea. Rashi is very strange over here because, you know, if anyone's claiming the Ksuba, then it's she who's claiming the Ksuba. But to call him the Baal a Tovea is a very strange kind of thing, because conceptually the Baal is like the Lova. He's not the Malva. He's the one from whom we're trying to get money out of. So it doesn't make sense that he's suing someone. The concept of tovea means a lawsuit. You know, a claimant who has a lawsuit against someone else, you owe me money.
But it could be tovea, mekach tos. It's a mekach tos he's claiming.
Right, but he's claiming, Rashi says, hefsek ksuba, that he doesn't want to pay the ksuba. That would make sense if he was collecting something, if he's suing for something. You see, Rabbi Tam is going to shift our whole emphasis here from the Baal to the father, and then the father becomes the Tovea. What is the father being Tovea?
Mayor.
Exactly. He's being Tovea Knas.
But the father's never going to make that Tovea unless the Baal first has a claim. So we have to have both.
Right, but the Gemara is going to go through, if you remember from yesterday's year, the Gemara is going to say that we had a there was like a pre-trial, there was a round number one, and then there was round number two. Right, for example, first, you know, we dealt with Dini Mominus, and then he brought in his Edim, and then we disproved his Edim, we disqualified them, and then the father claims Motzi Shemra. Okay. So the story in our Mishnah begins with the father's claim. And now the question is, well, the husband's claim was based on Edom, and the Edom were disqualified. Once the Edom were disqualified, then the father could jump in and say, well, now you have to pay me as a Motzi Shemra. But Rashi learns that the whole focal point of our Mishnah and the subject of Motzi Shemra, whether you need three judges according to Rebbeir or 23 judges according to Chachamim, is the Baal's Tvia. He's the one who's being Tovea, he's claiming that he wants to be Mafsid Hamiksu. So what we want to do now is go through the Tosus and see all the objections of Rabbeinu Tam and all the slings and arrows that he throws in the direction of Rashi. Pirish B'Kuntris, you have it? That the Mishnah is referring to Shabbal Toen Pesach Pasuach Matzos. That's what Rashi says. We saw it in the Rashi in the Mishnah. We see it again here in Rashi in the Gemara that Lo Matzasi LeBitcha Basulin. I found the Pesach Pasuach, and he's coming to be Mafsid HaLeksuba LaHafsida Ksuba Sa. Correct. Now, the Machlokis now according to Rashi between Rabbi Meir and Chachamim is the following: since the Baal is coming into Beis Din and he's being Tovea's Ksuba, that's called Dinei Mominus. If it's Dini Mominus, how many judges do you need?
Three.
Hence the Shita of Rabbi Meir. Comes along the Chacham and say, Chayshina Lalas. We have to worry about the possibility that the word is going to get out, that the father, you know, this husband ran into Beis Din the very morning after he consummated the marriage, and he starts claiming that she's not a Basula, Pesach Basula. The rumor is going to get out. You know, these things like have wings and they fly, and the Edom are going to hear, and they're going to say, wait a minute, this is a case that we have Edus, we have something to say about this case. We were there under the boardwalk, so we have something to testify, right?
So, Deval, his claim has it that he believes his wife was a Bugari from the beginning, from before this, rather than between the witnesses.
Well, you know what, the Baal really doesn't know. You know, he doesn't have witnesses. He has no definite knowledge one way or the other. Exactly when this hanky-panky went on, he doesn't know. If it went on during Erisin, after the Erisin, the last 12 months, then it's a capital. That's really heavy. It may have gone on before the Erisin, but either way, she fooled him, and the father fooled him, into signing a document in which he committed himself to a ksuba of a basula. He wants to get out of that document. By the way, I look at Jerry and I'm thinking of Canada. Why do I think of Canada? Tell me if I'm wrong here, Jerry. Is there a province in Canada called Manitoba? So there's a very famous case that reached, I think, the Supreme Court of Manitoba, Canada, many, many years ago, probably 15, 20 years ago, about the status of a ksuba in the eyes of a Canadian court. Because how many times, I'm just playing a game with you, how many times does the name of God appear in a ksuba? Zero. Why do I say that? I mean, you laugh at me, right? That's Berzon is asking me such a strange question. The answer is because a ksuba is not a religious document. No one could claim what we call freedom of religion with regard to a ksuba. Ksuba is, again, it's written in Hebrew, but Hebrew is a language too. And if you translate the ksuba into English, you'll find an a secular document, which is really what ksuba is. By the way, if you had a ksuba in your back pocket and you wanted to go, pardon the expression, makana pish, you would be allowed to take it into the bathroom. There's nothing holy about a ksuba. A ksuba is a document. It's a legal document. It's like a shtar chov. Just like a shtar chov says, oh, I here owe you $1,000 that I borrowed from you. That's what a ksuba is. And if I'm not mistaken, the Manitoba Court, the Supreme Court in Canada, came, in that province, came to the conclusion that a ksuba is absolutely legally binding, even in a non-Jewish court. So in the case of a ksuba, which is that I've lost my train of thought for a second, I went off on a tangent, but what I wanted to say is the following. That according to Rashi's understanding, and this is back to Reuven, your point, the Baal is coming in, he has a shtar that he's signed on, he's not literally signed on, although there is a minute today that the Baal also has a signature, but technically he's not signed on, but the witness is signed to the effect that they heard him being mischayev to this ksuba. And he's claiming that he signed under mistaken information. That's called a mekatos. That ischaibus is ischaibus betos. Little did I know that I would find a pesach hasulah, and she's not a basulah. I want to make sure I'm on track here, because Reuven asked me a question. So the answer to your question is the following, Reuven. Does the Baal know exactly when this be'ilah took place? He has proof positive that she's a ba'ula. He therefore comes to the conclusion that the ksuba should be invalidated. It was signed under false pretenses. Does he know anything about her status vis-a-vis dine nefashos? For that you need witnesses. He has no witnesses. So Rashi claims that the entire scenario of Motzi Shemra began with a monetary claim, which really, in a sense, plays into the hands of Rabbi Meir, that therefore all we need is what? Is three judges. Come along the Chacham, they say Chayshina Lelatz, but we have to worry about the reputation, the word on the street that's circulating, very quickly, that the Baal didn't find Besulin, or so he claims. And therefore the Eidim might say, well, I think, it triggers off some sort of memory and they show up in business. So rather than start with three and then add another 20 judges in event that Eidim come, anticipating the possibility that Eidim will come, it'll be jacked up to a level of what? Of Din and Fashos. We have to start the Din with 23 judges.
Okay. So is the Paul's claim, does he want out of the marriage and he wants a zero, or does he want a reduction to above 100? From 200 to 100.
That's a machlokus in the first parak of Ksubas. What is his claim? Is it an absolute mekartos, or he's just claiming that she could only receive a ksuba of a mana, which is half the amount of the ksuba that he was
described? That's
a sugya on daf, I'm trying to remember the first parak, maybe it's on daf yud or daf yud aleph.
You said he has proof positive.
He doesn't have proof positive. His only proof is that, it was a little bit loose down there, if you know what I'm talking about.
Appears,
and I don't want to go into detail.
It appears to be. She could have been on horseback riding. Who knows why?
No, that's not true. In the case of Damim, there are two types of Tainas Pesulin. One is called Tainas Damim. So then you can say, well, maybe she was riding a horse. But in the case of Pesach Pasuach, that means that that's not something that riding a horse can do. That requires a certain action. Okay, but that, again, that's Perikama de Ksubis, which we, I don't want to say we skipped it, but we skipped it. Okay, so that's what happens. Oh, the Koshel Rabbeinu Tam. Now, Rabosa, I have to give you another introduction here. When the Baal says, I found the Pesach Pasuach, who does he think he is? How does he expect that the Beis Din is going to believe his claim? Imagine you sign a document, and then you come in, you claim X, Y, and Z, and therefore the whole thing was a bluff, and I never had this in mind. Well, what proof do you have? Admittedly, he has no Eidim, because otherwise Rabbi Meir is also going to require 23 judges. If he has no Eidim, it's just his word. Why does he think that he's going to win the case? Let's say he hires a lawyer. Why does the lawyer think that he has a case? Just because this guy comes in. What's going to stop every single marriage guy to come in, especially Osh, if we go according to the Mandi Omer, that he's just reducing the ksuba, right? Getting the two. Well, what's going to stop anybody, and inhibit anybody from coming into Beis Din the very next morning and claiming Lo matzasi lebitcha besulin. Pesach pasuch matzasi. Anybody can be a no good liar. So the Gemara says in the first parak again, we skipped it, that the entire enterprise of Tanis Besun is predicated on one assumption, which you either take it or leave it. And if you take it, then our sugya makes sense. If you leave it, our sugya is problematic. And that is that ksuba is a takonas chacham. Okay, the other man, the Omar, okay, this we'll call number one, holds that ksuba is do'oraisa. Okay, Asher, I'm going to quiz you. Where is the source in the Torah that ksuba is do'oraisa?
So,
Kimar ha bisulos, which is the parasha of what? Of Mefat. Okay, fine. See, here's the overlap between Sanhedrin and Ksubas. So according to one man, the Orik Ksubas Doraisa. Now, the idea that a husband could be believed when he claims Pesach Pasuch Matzasi Lafsida Ksubas is based on the premise that Ksubas Durabonin, it's a Takanas Chacham. Again, there's a whole sugya why the Chacham were motivated to institute Ksuba, but whatever that is, we don't have to go into that right now. Shalotei Kalabet of Eltsia. But the main point is that when the Chachamim instituted this takana, they said that if there is circumstantial evidence to be mafsid the ksuba, to undermine the ksuba, then we're going to step aside and we're going to completely nullify our takana. Again, only if it's takana derabbanan, not if ksuba is doraisa. Now, what is the circumstantial evidence that tells me that he's not lying? After all, I could ask you the following question. Everybody should lie in this case. Save himself 100 zuz, which is an awesome sum of money. I mean, imagine if you could buy a goat for 2 zuz. I think a goat today sells for about 20,000 shekel, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know. Check me out on this. Goats are very expensive. So, the Zabin Abba betrays zuz. We're talking about 100 zuz because a ksuba for a besula is 200 zuz. And we're splitting it now. We're reducing it by half. The answer is, again, you don't have to write this down. I'm not going to write it down. Just hear it and let it fly. And that's called Chazaka Ein Adam Torach B'Seuda U'Mafsida. We think that marriage is expensive today, right? To get married, marry off a daughter. That's why if you daven in the shtibul, every morning costs you at least 5 to 10 shekels because there's always somebody coming around who's marrying off his daughter, right? And I was told that in Ger they made a takhala, you know, that you can't spend on a wedding more than X. But if you're not a Ger Chassid, I was at a wedding in Canada. There were 2 symphony bands, okay? That's a Rubinstein Chassid, and Jerry will know what I mean. And it was a waterfront hotel. It was, like, incredible. I mean, but Baruch Hashem, you know, if they could afford it, then maybe that's a good way of spending your money. I can think of other ways of spending your money, but that's what they do. I was at a wedding in New York. I think I told you this in New York Hilton, where the flowers were probably worth about $50,000. Just the flowers themselves. And the Waldorf Astoria. I was sitting next to a Rabbi Kamenetsky, who passed away. He had a yeshiva in South Shore, in off Queens, you know, towards the island. And he was crying because he's been trying to get some donations from the Baal HaSimcha for years. And he said, if he would have given me just the flowers, I could have built my yeshiva. He was crying. Yeah. Amongst the entertainers at that wedding were some of my favorite Jewish singers. You know, it was an amazing wedding. So a person spends that much money on a wedding, and then he comes in the very next morning to say that, you know, that the whole deal is off. You know, saying she's a basula. So that's okay if you hold the ksuba is the rabbanon. If you hold the ksuba is the oraisa, then it's a whole different story. Okay. So having said that, the kasha. So here's Rabbeinu Tam's onslaught, as I call it. Chada. You know, when he says chada, number one, he means hold your horses. I got a whole bunch of kashas over here. Let's go back to the Mishnah. What does it say in the Mishnah? Does it say Motzi Shem Rav Shlosha? What does it say? Everybody turn to the Mishnah, okay? I'm not going to turn to the Mishnah because I have all these books here, so you'll do that for me. You know, every section of the Mishnah is called a bava. You know, a bava means it has a beginning, an end. So the end is always Mishlosha. But what, where do I find Motzi Shemra? Together with what? Because you don't have a Mishnah.
Okay.
You have it in here. Exactly, with Ones Mefata. Now, what's the common denominator between Ones Mefata and Motzi Shemra? Huh? Before we get to Shlosha, what connects them together? I mean, the Mishnah formulates them in one breath. There must be some common, some similarity.
No, there's
Knas. No, I'm saying before you get to the word Shlosha, are we talking about compensation? Great, again, this is the overlap between Tzumas and Sanhedrin, because Onus and Mefata is a Knas. How many times in the last few months, Asher, have you heard from me or from you the word Knas? Thousands, right? Because you're learning the third pack of Tzumas, it's all about Knas. That's called Onus and Mefata. In the same breath, the Mishnah mentions Motzi Shemra. Now, Motzi Shemra is also a Knas, but which dimension of Motzi Shemra? Who's the Tovea of Knas in the case of Motzi Shemra?
The father.
The father, not the husband. His dealing is with compensation with Dine Monos, because he's claiming, I don't want to pay the Ksuba. That's like Alvos and Odos. So, Rabbi Natan's first objection to Rashi is, why did Rabbi Yudah Nasi, when he wrote the Mishnah, he puts Motzi Shemra together with Onus and Mefata? That's like Min B'Shein Omino, according to Rashi. These are two separate entities. You know, you're talking about Onus and Mefata, you're talking about a Knas, you're talking about Motzi Shemra, according to Rashi's chat, has to do with Ksuba. And that's not Knas. You know, you're really mixing apples and oranges. That's the first kasha of Rabbi Natan. The Onus, and furthermore, the Bechal Duchta, what does that mean, Bechal Duchta? In any place where? On the face of the earth? Yeah. No. Any place in Shas. You see, Rabbeinu Tam came before computers, but he knew Shas like the computer knows Shas. Today, if you want to look for a word in a computer, you just do a word search. I happen to be the owner of Bar Ilan, if you're familiar with that. Bar Ilan, it's an unbelievable tool. If I want to find out how many times it says Motzi Shemra and Shas, within a split second I have an answer to my question. It'll tell me exactly where it's Shas. Says Rabbeinu Tam, I don't need Bar Ilan. I can do it on my own. And I'm going to tell you that whenever it says Motzi Shemra anywhere in Shas, it always refers to Mea Kesef, to the penalty and the fine which the father of this girl is claiming, is demanding from the Baal. He says, B'chol Duchta, Shemazkir Motzi Shemra Havi Le'inyan Kuf Slan. Kuf means 100 Slan. In other words, when you hear Motzi Shemra anywhere, whether it's in a Mishnah, a Tosefta, it's in a Sifra, Sifri, it's a Gemara, Shasi, a Bavli, Yushabi, whatever it is, you know we're talking about 100 Slan. Nowhere does the Mishnah or the Gemara ever use the term Motzi Shemra to refer to the Ksuba. Ksuba is completely foreign to Motzi Shemra. It happens to be that in a situation where the Baal claims Pesach Pasuach, he could actually argue that he doesn't want to pay the Ksuba. But that's not what Motzi Shemra is about. Motzi Shemra is about slander against a Yiddish Mädel, you know, a good basic active girl. And as a result of the slander, the Torah says he's got to pay Mea Kesef. For example, if I open up the Parsha Motzi Shemra in Kiteisek, how many times will it mention Ksuba? Zero. Motzi Shemra is not about a Ksuba. The Ode, and furthermore, and this I think is the real TKO, as we call it in boxing. You know, this is the last, but you know, he's really hitting Rashi hard over here. He says, Demas Nisim Mumchen Hei. In other words, when it says Shlosha Dayonim in the Mishnah, it means Mumchen. How do I know this? Because again, the Mishnah is divided into two parts. The first part of the Mishnah, which is Dinei Mamonos B'Shlosha, is referring to Hedyotos, because that's Mamon, that's compensation. Then the Mishnah speaks about Knas, and the Mishnah has Kefel, and it has Dal Vehei, and it has Ones, and it has Mefata, and all of these require Mumchen. For example, if we wanted to judge a case of Ones and Mefata in Chutz Laretz, in Bavel, technical foul, because we don't have Mumchen in Bavel. A Knas requires Mumchen. So when the Mishnah says Shlosha, it's referring to Mumchen. But according to Rashi, who's the Tovea? The Baal. And what is he being Tovea? Ksuba. Ksuba is Mama. It doesn't require Mumchen. Any three intelligent Jews off the street can gather together, create a Bezdin, and they can deal with the Ksuba. I mean, yeah, all the time the Bati Dinim here in Eretz Yisrael today, which are not smuchim, they're dealing with ksuba. Ksuba ishus ahim until they're coming out of your ears. So why does the Mishnah require mumchim? That's a real kash on Rashi. He says, "Bekamet duchti ashkechan shedonim dinim ekrosus bebavel." We find that ksuba is a subject of a diun, of a bezdin in Bavel, even though there are no mumchim, no smuchim in Bavel. He says that today, Rabbi Natan is describing his situation in southern France, and he says we're dealing with dinik ksuba all the time in Abati Dinim. How do we have the right to do that? We don't have smicha. The answer is we're not dealing with the knas, we're dealing with bavel. But our Mishnah requires, in the case of Motzi Shemra, three mumchim. Hence, we must be talking about knas. We cannot be talking about ksuba because ksuba is not a knas. And I thought at this point he would rest his case. The other, and furthermore, Masha Mefaresh Nami Rashi says that the reason why the Rabbanon require 23 judges, Rashi says Chayshinu Lala. Says Rashi, what does that mean? Shemitok sheyiton. As a result of the time of the Baal, Pesach Pasuf Matzasi, Chayshin on Shema Yishmu Aedim. Somewhere the Aedim on the other side of town are going to hear this rumor going around that the Baal says he was Boel, his wife, and he found her to be a Pesach Pasua. V'yavo Aedim Shezimsa. And therefore the Rabbanu required 23 judges. He says, I don't understand. Ein lashon laz, no fill also. The word laz, says Rabbi Natan, again he did a word search through Shas, and the word laz means sheker. That's the taish, that's the translation of the word laz. And he's going to quote a Gemara Gittin, we'll see that in a second. So according to Rashi, we're not talking about sheker, on the contrary. We believe that maybe the Baal is telling the truth. And he found the Pesach Pasuach, and where the smoke, there's fire. Maybe she had an actual znus, and the Edom are therefore going to come out because they trust the Baal, and they remember that you know they saw her going into a private blah blah blah. I don't want to get into detail here, and therefore they come forward and they testify. Well, the word laz here makes no sense. Laz means sheker. Al advarshu sheker kimo. I'll quote a Gemara in Gittin. Nimtzei satamotzi laz al gittin arishonim. Laz means that you say that the original Gittin are sheker, that they're not reliable. There's some falsification of the truth. V'od, and furthermore, Dika'amar, the Gemara is going to quote Rava soon, and Rava is going to say that if initially they gathered together 23 judges, and then the judges went home, and were left with three judges, and the Baal comes into Bezdin, and he says, quote, Donuli mia dine mominos, judge me at least on dini mominos, meaning if my claim, or if I shouldn't say my claim, but if the Edom were disqualified, and therefore it's not a capital case, then at least judge me for my claim in mominos, which according to Rashi means the ksuba, is mi dochako. Why does the Baal feel that he has to be pushed to claim ksuba? Now, when is ksuba collected? Anybody know? There are two scenarios in which a woman could collect a ksuba.
Get or death.
Right, either she becomes a widowed, he dies, and she collects the ksuba from the heirs, or he divorces her. Who's thinking about ksuba now? The man just got married. Last night, he had a chuppah, and so forth and so on. And the very next day, he's coming in to claim the ksuba. Why would he do so? I mean, ksuba, first of all, what if she dies before him? No ksuba. Forget it, there's no ksuba. Secondly, if he dies. So he's already worried about it. Maybe he's thinking about suicide. I don't know. But why is he already worried about his death? You know what I'm saying? You know, he's not trying to calculate how much Social Security he's going to collect. He's figuring out when he's going to die. You know what I'm saying? Well, why is he coming to claim the ksuba? The man is 19 years old. He's 21 years old. He just got his marriage. He's coming in to argue about the ksuba. Why does Besen have to even get involved in a ksuba claim at this early stage? Ve'haya, if he wants to divorce her at some point in the future, then we'll deal with the ksuba. She has a tefi on the ksuba. Is called Mancheno Isha Tovaso Solo Ksuba. As long as she's not claiming pay me up for the Ksuba, why is he saying to the Bezdin, judge my claim for Bitla Ksuba, right? For voiding the Ksuba. V'yodin, furthermore, the Ka'amah, the Gemara says, Tav'o mamon bishlosha. That he is claiming, right, Tvia, he's the Tovea of mamon bishlosha. It should say Tav'a, according to Rashi. The whole subject of that Mishnah is Ksuba. Well, who's the Tovea in Ksuba, he or she? She's the one who's Tovea. Because again, the word Tovea, as I tried to explain before, means when I'm suing you to pay out of pocket. Like the Malva who's suing the Lova to pay for a loan. Well, in the Malva loan, in the Malva Lova paradigm, then she is the Malva who's claiming against the Lova. He's the Lova. He's the Neschayev. He's the Meshubat. So why does the Gemara use the word Tovea? It should be Tov'a with a hey at the end. It should be a feminine. V'od, and furthermore, Mashayach Tvia. How can you even use the word Tvi over here? And Rashi says the Tvi is the Baal. Ain't no Baal lift our Satsumi Ksubasa. That's not called a Tvi. He's coming to claim I don't have to pay the Ksuba. That's not called a Tvi. Tvi means when I sue you to pay out of pocket. V'od, and furthermore, says Rabbeinu Tam, B'makom de'ika nefashos, right? The Gemara has a whole interpretation according to Rava that we're talking about a case where the father brought witnesses. He brought witnesses to disqualify the witnesses of the Baal. What's that called when a second pair of witnesses come to say you couldn't have been there because you were with us in another place? Anybody remember? Hazama, right? So the Gemara is going to say according to Rava that there was Hazama over here, and the father brought Eli Hazama. And now he wants to claim that the Baal was guilty of slander, and therefore the Baal has to pay mea kesef. Ubemakom de'ika nefashos, and the Gemara is going to say that we're talking about a case where, since there are edim, then this might be a capital judgment. Mashma debahu mamon airi, that whatever mamon was being claimed at the outset is now being claimed by the fact that the Edom came in to disqualify the first pair of Edom. Now, if you go like Rashi, then you have a problem, because initially, who is the one who is claiming a monetary claim, according to Rashi?
The Baal.
The Baal. And now, there's another monetary claim, and that's the Av. So it's very odd that the Mishnah seems to... the Gemara seems to assume that the same moment that we started with, we're going to continue with. So what happens if, according, let's say we're going to, I'm just letting the cat out of the bag, we're going to see Rabbeinu Tam is going to learn that the Tovea Nasugya is the father, and he's being Tovea the Mea Kesef, then when he brings Edom to be Mazim and disqualify the Edom of the Baal, then he has a claim of Motzi Shemra. So that we started with his claim, now he substantiates his claim with his Edom who are Mazimim, and therefore he continues with his claim, and it's all the same claim. So Rabbeinu Tam says, Mashma debahu maman ayri, that both of these laws are addressing the same moment. According to Rashi, there are two different mamons here. We started with the moment of the Baal, which is Ksuba, now we're going shifting into the moment of the father, which is the Kuf, the Me'aslon Kesef of Knas. V'odin, furthermore, Shamati mi'arav Rabbeinu Peretz, okay, he's one of the earlier Baalei HaTosfos, the Rabbi Meir is like Ksuba Doraisa, the Perek Afalpi. So later on in Masechta Ksubas, Rabbeinu Tam is actually of the opinion that Ksuba is Doraisa. It's not a Takonis Chachom. It's derived from Kimora Besulis in the Parashat Mafata. And therefore, I know Nema Lavsi the Ksubasa. If he comes in and he claims, well, I found it to be a Ba'ula, we don't believe him because the Torah says he has to pay the Ksuba. The burden of proof is on him. And he doesn't have Aiden to prove that she was a Ba'ula, and therefore we don't rely on his claim. We believe that he doesn't have the power and the authority to undermine Ksuba Doraisa. If I accept the opinion that Ksuba is only a Takanas Chachamim, Neman, then he could be Mafsid of the Ksuba with his claim, Pesach Pasul Mitzasi. Kinebuchach beperikam in the Ksubas, that's the Sugya in the first parak of Ksubas. The Omer of Nachman Chachamim Tiknu Ibnos Yisrael Basula Masayim Lalmon Amona. They were the ones who made this takana of ksubavim haminuhu, and they believe him when he says pesach pasuach, because the chazaka einanu toreach besuda masidi wouldn't have spent $50,000 on the wedding and then just completely, you know, smash the whole simcha the next morning. But that also only makes sense according to the chachamim of Rabbi Meir. But according to Rabbi Meir, ksuba is doraisa, and he's not believed without testimony, without witnesses to support his claim. Which means that our sugya of Rabbi Meir and the Chacham is a very odd sugya, because according to Rashi's pshat, the whole sugya revolves around his taina that he wants to be mafsid of the ksuba. Well, Rabbi Meir would never even believe him to be mafsid of the ksuba. Well, what leg does he have to stand on? As I said before, he's paying lawyer's fees to defend his claim. He doesn't have witnesses. It's just his word. We're not going to rely on his word against ksuba doraisa. And therefore, Mefarish Rabbeinu Tam, the Kula Shmaitita, the entire sugya Ayri is addressing, when Inyan Kuf Sloim Shall of Tovea Lebal. Who is the Tovea? It's the father. What's the Tvia? The Mea Kesef. Now we can answer all the questions that Tosis raised, all the objections against Rashi.
Tosis is a big problem with the Chachamim. How the Chachamim, why the Chachamim are all doing 23? What's the case of the Chachamim?
Right, the Chachamim are going to say that once the Baal brought Edim, and then the father disqualified those Edim through Hazama, so we see already that there's smoke over here, you know, that maybe there are Edom out there. So the Chacham still have to be worried that maybe witnesses will come and they won't disqualify those witnesses. The first round was an aborted attempt on the part of the Baal. So the father comes with a taina that you are creating, you're slandering my daughter because your Edom are disqualified. And he says, well, get together three judges, I want to sue you. I want to sue you for libel, for 100 asah kesef. Oh, so the Chacham would say, you know what? Even though it's a monetary lawsuit, we're going to need 23 judges. Why? Because even though, despite the fact that the first pair of Edom that the Baal brought were disqualified, but maybe, just maybe, another pair of Edom will come in and they will be kosher v'yosher.
What does
Tosfos call
the Baal?
Then?
The father is the
Tveya.
What is the Baal called?
The Baal is called the Nitba. That's what it's called. The Nitba.
And that means?
You want to spell it for you?
Yeah,
from whom is being
Nitba? Claimed? What's the opposite of a claimant? A victim. Defendant. Okay? Oh. So now, the claim is what? Is it Mammon or Knas, according to Rabbeinu Tam? It's Knas. And if it's Knas, we understand very well why the Mishnah requires three Mumchim. Very Gishmak, according to Rabbeinu Tam. So the whole deal is a classic Motzi Shemra. A classic Motzi Shemra, if you do a word search throughout Shas, means a claim of 100 Ma, 100 Kesef, which is a Knas. And we understand that we're not dealing with Ksuva here, which is Mammon. We're dealing with Knas. We're dealing with the Mea Kesef of Knas. So our Mishnah is not dealing with Ksuba. Okay. Now let's understand Choshen Lelas.
Why not three Mumchim instead of 23?
Oh, because the Chachamim are worried that maybe two witnesses will come in and then we have to put her to death. And therefore we need a Bezdin to accept these Edim, and that Bezdin would have to be made up of 23 judges.
Which Edim? The Baal's Edim?
The Baal's
second.
I would say the following. You're right. In a sense, you're right, Don. It is the Baal's Edim that might come in. But the Baal's Edim have already fallen on their face. You know, they were disqualified. You know, they're out. You know,
no, but initially, what's confusing me is that we're talking about initially versus later, right?
Right.
So initially, if he comes in with, in fact, the original discussion we were having three days ago was he says, "I'm going to bring in witnesses," and the question is, "All right, so do we start with three or 23?"
No, so that's in that first half of the scenario, when he says I have witnesses, then everybody, even Rav Meir, agrees we're going to start with 23.
Okay.
At one point or another, we send these 23 people home, these
right.
judges home. Why?
20 home. We send 20 home.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. Right. Whatever it is. Yeah. Anyway, right. the Beis Din. Why are we dispersing them? Because the father brought in Edim Hamazimim, who said Imanu Ayisim regarding the first pair of Edim, and now's when our sugya of Rav Meir Chacham begins. Why? Because after the father brought in the Edim Hamazimim to disqualify the Edim of the Baal, at that point the father turns to the Beis Din and he says, I want to claim Knas.
Okay.
Mea Kesa.
So there's still 23.
Oh, no, because we dispersed.
We dispersed.
We sent them home.
At which point we sent them home?
As soon as we finished the Hazama presence, which means we shot down the Edom of the Baal, and right now, I'm giving you Rebbe's argument, there are no Edom. We don't believe that there are any Edom anywhere in the four corners of the earth, even in Thailand. There are no Edom. Period.
Understood.
Now the father is claiming what?
Knas.
Let's get together three mumchim.
Three mumchim.
That's Rabbi Meir. Come along with Chachamim, and they say, you know what? This case is quite complicated. We just sent home all these judges. Something doesn't look right. Again, I'm not going into Machlok Shin Ula and Rav. Okay, so Ula is going to say that we assume that maybe there are other Avens somewhere in Thailand that had come in. Because the father knocked off, disqualified this pair of Avens, but maybe there are other Avens that he won't be able to disqualify. Hence, we want to judge the case with 23. Rav is going to have a slightly different thing. He's going to say, well, we're going to judge the same woman, man, father with 23 judges. I'm sorry, with three judges. That doesn't look good for all the other 20 judges that were sent home. We sent them on vacation. They went to Eilat for a vacation. Why did they go to Eilat for vacation? And we're left with three judges. Doesn't smell good. So again, that's all the nitty-gritty details of how to understand the Chachamim. But whatever it is, the Chachamim are worried about a scenario where at some point or another we had 23 judges and now it became a monetary case. Rabbi Meir insists, let's just drop it down to three judges. The Chachamim say, no, we can't. We started with 23 judges. We believe that maybe, again, this is Ula's take on the Chacham. Maybe there will be other Edom somewhere in the face of the earth, or if we go with Rav's, once we started with 23 judges, we have to complete the din, even though it's only a monetary case, we have to complete with those 23 judges. We can't send them to vacation. It'll look like they're, you know, they're in the eyes of the spectators, it might look like they're not reliable judges, and so forth and so on. But that's all secondary. But what's primary here is that the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim revolves around the tviya of the father, now that he's disqualified the edim of the Baal, that's called Hazama, and we're at Shlav Bet, you know, in the second stage. How many judges do we need?
The Baal's edim get off unscathed.
No, that's another question here about Hazama, because the Torah says, Vasisimlo Kash Hazama. So for that, we're going to need to hold on to the 23 judges. And our discussion is going to be after we finish that entire round with the father's, with the Baal's edim and the Mazimim who disqualified them and whatever the repercussions are, we're finished with that. Now, the father says, I want a judgment on Mea Kesef on Knas. And that's the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chacham. So now, what's Choshishin Lelaz? Do you remember Rabbi Nitam had a problem? Because Rashi said Choshishin Lelaz means that there are eight of them out there who are going to hear the story.
Yeah.
The hearsay, and they might be motivated, gravitated to Beis Din to testify. But Rabbi Natan proves that the word Laz means Sheker. Oh. So now, what does it mean that according to Rabbanon Chayshinon Lelaz, Choshin Lelaz, Hainu, Lelaz, Ala Dayonim? Oh, the Laz here, Sheker, is on the judges, not the Laz of the woman's reputation. You know, they're schmoozing in a negative way about whether she fooled around or not. Kigon, what's the case? Shehevi aval edim shezinsa. Okay, so this was round one, Don. That's the first round. And the Baal brought in his witnesses. V'hukhashu. And we're going to have a lot to say about this one word, v'hukush. So if you have the Tosus, you want to underline that word, or maybe on the computer you can bold it. I don't know if they allow you that, but hukush. That's going to be a long, long discussion. But whatever it is, hukushu means that there were other eidim that disqualified the Baal's eidim. Now, d'mechayev ha-Baal hashta kuf slon. This is an unbelievable chiddush of Rabbeinu Tam, and again, we're going to have to spend a lot of time on this. Rabbeinu Tam claims that once we disqualify the Baal's eidim, at that moment in time, he becomes obligated to pay kuf slon. Okay?
As a knas.
He's already a motzi shema. He's guilty of slander. Why? Because he brought Aiden that she was mazana, and these Aiden were disqualified.
So then it shoots down all Rabbeinu Tam by saying that. Because now, what's the tovea of the father? He doesn't need a tovea. Because if you're telling me, once the Aiden is shot down, he's chayav meir slam. So I don't need the father to come claim it. The Beis Din already mizmechayev him. So what's the claim?
I think what happens is that you need a what's called hamorah b'din. You need an actual ruling on the part of a Beis Din, and that has to come through a tvir. So it means like this: on the first round, when the Baal comes and claims that she was mizana, and he has witnesses to testify, that's going to require 23 judges, and now we're dealing purely with Dinei Nefashos, and even Reb Meir is on board. We need 23 judges for a capital crime. Now, what happens is that the Eidim against this woman, which were brought or subpoenaed by the Baal, were disqualified. That's called Hukushin. As soon as that happens, now there's got to be a new judgment. We shift from Dini Nefashos over to Dini Mamon, says Rabbi Meir. At this point, send home 20 judges and let 3 judges remain behind, or we'll get another 3 judges, send them all, or whatever it might be. And now we have a Dini Mamon. On what? On a knas. We need the Baal. I'm sorry. We need the Av to make the claim, because again, nobody's going to claim on his behalf. Knas is not something that automatically you pay. You know, you need someone to sue you for a knas. And the father is not going to sue his son-in-law for a knas. And Rabbi Meir says, no problem. We sent up all the judges because we're finished with the Dini Nefashos. And now we're going to start Dini Mamonos based on the Tvi of the Av of the father for knas. Comes along the Chacham and they say Chayshinin lelaz. Says Rabbeinu Tam, what's laz? Laz means sheker. What is the sheker here? I'll be right with you, Jerry. So he says laz means sheker. He says the following: laz ala dayonim, right? Because hevi abal edim shezin tzvahukushu demachayev abal hashta kuf sloim, meaning after the tvi of the father. The rabbanan savri that boy, we need 23 judges. Why? De'i, if we go like Rabbi Meir. As Rabbi Meir would have it, that begimel, all we need is 3 judges. Chayshin and Shema Achakach Yavo Edim Shezinsa. Then later on, Edim will come, testify that in fact she had Znus. Because again, the first pair of Edim were Hukrishu, which means they were disqualified. But now there might be 2 Eidim that will be qualified. V'itztarech lahosif ad chav gimel. We sent home the Dayanim, right? Because the claim against this woman as a criminal case, the state, right, against this woman, that was aborted, that was terminated because we disqualified the Eidim. But now, after sending home the 23 judges, we're going to have to what? We're going to have to deal with this case in a pure... in a pure monetary case, there's going to be a chashash sheker on the first group of judges, shalafi, shalo yadu, they didn't know ladun, they just didn't have the knowledge and the expertise to judge. They had the numbers, but not the quality, if you know what I mean. Is therefore sifu aleihem, therefore they replaced them. So therefore the Chacham say that in order to avoid a sheker, in which people are you know, fake news, they're saying terrible things about the judges, that they were just not qualified to judge, therefore let's insist that we bring back the original 23 judges, and we should judge this case as if it was a dini nefashas case. And now we understand the lashon las. But again, all this is based on the possibility that other witnesses will come in. Correct? That was the language of Chayshin and Shema Achakak Yavo Eidim Shezinsa. So Tosa says, Dafka Kishahuk Chishu. Why is there a serious chashash that although we disqualify the Baal's Eidim in the first round, maybe other Eidim Ksherim will come in? Because it was a case of Huk Chishu. Huk Chishu means that there was a disqualification of the Eidim, but we never conclusively decided or determined that they perjured themselves.
Right.
Well, we can't accept them because we simply don't know. This is what's called trey means you have two witnesses against two witnesses. So the first two witnesses of the Baal say that we were with a woman under the boardwalk on a certain day, and the second pair made say, well, she was with us on that day in Chicago. She couldn't have been in on Coney Island Beach because she was with us in Chicago. Right? So that's called hakchosha. So we really don't know which of the two Eidim are telling the truth. There's only one very rare case in which the Torah says we know which of these two pairs of Eidim are telling the truth. That's only what? Hazon. That's only Imanu Ha'isa. But if they don't say Imanu Ha'isa, they just say that the woman was with us somewhere else at that time, and therefore you're lying through your teeth. So we really don't know which of the two Eidim we should believe. So technically the Eidim are disqualified, but nevertheless, we don't know that for sure they perjured themselves. So it could very well be that another pair of Eidim will come in. And therefore the Chachamim want to make sure and guarantee that we have 23 judges. And the word las here is that if you don't bring back those 23 judges that began with the case, when the Baal's first his pair of Eidim testified on this nus, if you don't reinstate those judges, then people are going to say, and this is a fabrication of the truth, that the reason why the judges were sent home was because they are invalid judges. You know, they don't have the knowledge and the expertise. When in truth, the reason we send them home is because we disqualify the Eidim, and it became a dini mamonos because the father is now claiming kuf slayim. But people are going to mistakenly think that, you know what? There's something wrong with these judges. So that's the laws on the judges. That's not the way Rashi understood it. That he came in, the Baal came in to claim his ksuba. And he said, Pesach Pasuach. And the laws is that people are murmuring about this woman that maybe she had some sort of an illicit relationship. And that's gonna bring the Eidim in. But there's no Sheker over here, according to Rashi. So the word laz is out of place, but according to Rabbeinu Tam, the word laz is very appropriate in this context because people are going to say lies about the judges that were sent home. All right, Rabbos, I realize that it's getting late. We didn't come to the finish line, but we have pretty much the machlokas here between Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. Just to summarize, Rashi's learning that the Tovea here and the Tvia is the Baal about the Ksuba, whereas Rabbeinu Tam is learning that the Tovea and the Tvia is not the Baal about the Ksuba, but rather the father about the Knas. Okay, then? So let me take this opportunity to wish everyone a great Shabbos, Parshas Bullock, one of the most beautiful and important parshios in the entire Chumash.
So the father is not claiming the Tvia Slayim because the judges have been mistreated, so to speak.
No. He's claiming the Mea Kesa because the Baal's Eidim were a bunch of no good liars, right?
And he's claiming about the judges.
It's almost as if, again, don't take me literally, the father is intimating that the Baal probably paid off these witnesses. Because the very moment that we disqualify these witnesses and we assume that they're telling the... What motivated these Eidim to fabricate a whole story? The Baal probably paid them more. But whatever it is, the Baal slandered this woman. He came in with Eidim. The Eidim up soon. They're disqualified. Now, we have a momentous case. Because we finished with the Nefashos. The Baal's Eidim were disqualified. Now we have a new round and a new Bezdin with a new Tvia. And that's the father being Tovei. Here's where the Machlokas, Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim begins. Rabbi Meir says, in this new Tvia, The old judges go home, send them on vacation, and we have a Dini Mominus case, and it's only Dini Mominus. The Eidim of the Baal are out, they were disqualified, and the judges are out, all we need is three judges. Come along the Chacham and they say, Chayshin Elas, what does it look like that when we're still judging the very same case, at least the players on the stage are the same. Again, it's a whole different tvia. And all of a sudden, we refuse to allow the original judges to come in. Or alternatively, we're afraid that other Edom will come in. And Rabbi Natam insists that because the first Edom of the Baal were Hukhushu, which means we never really came to any conclusion about who's telling the truth, we have no Hanchayot, we have no guidelines here to know which pair. So maybe there are Edom out there in Thailand who will come forward and they will not be Hukhushu, they will not be. So we don't want to start a din that looks like a monetary case and then have to change the entire nature of the case and the makeup of the bezdin and introduce and invite another 20 judges. Let's start from scratch with 23 judges.
So the Baal Dinim, if they're being paid off by the Baal, they have no concern of dinim nefashos that might.
Right. You're asking a following question. In general, when you pay off Aiden, why would they agree to put their lives on the line? It depends how much you're willing to pay them.
Yeah.
This is what's called, if you ever saw that movie, I'll make you an offer that you can't refuse. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Sure.
All right.
Plenty of people
purging themselves for money.
It's interesting you picked Thailand because that's the new place that all of the post-money
kids go to. The American person's fascinated with Thailand. So.
Yeah, I spent a week in Thailand.
Oh, you spent a week in Thailand?
Yes, I spent a week in Thailand. And
the destination of choice of Israeli kids.
I would just tell you this. If